I'm Demelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. Linda K. Johnson is a visionary dance artist who has created conceptual projects and site-relevant performances for the last 40 years. She's been both an educator and curator, bringing together artists of varied disciplines to collaborate. I remember several of Linda's projects, such as an in-situ one in which she enlisted dancers to work as gardeners on a tiny strip of land at a road intersection in Portland. Several years ago, Linda brought me into a residency project in South Waterfront in Portland when the buildings were still being created and built and rented out. And that project was a year-long effort to create arts opportunities for residents there. And it was a way to bring people into a new neighborhood. She's done site-specific dances, I think on a trail in the woods for people to walk by as she danced. I mean, she's done too much for me to name, but I'm so glad to be able to talk with her right now, because Linda K. Johnson has always been an innovator in dance in multiple disciplines. She's now immersed on the Mycelium Dreams project, which aims to document conversations with veteran dancers in Portland. It's my sincere pleasure to welcome you, Linda K. Johnson, to Stage and Studio on Arts Watch.
Thank you so much. I think it's been maybe 15 years since you and I have been in conversation.
Well, that was then, but I'm sure we've seen each other before the pandemic. I am hoping. I'm hoping
we did.
Yes.
In a formal setting like this, yeah, where we get to
talk about art
out loud and our work. Yeah. Yes. So,
yeah,
thank you. You
always have a creative way of talking about art too, and it's always like very inspiring to me. So I'm really eager to talk about Mycelium, but I just want to kind of get caught up a little bit. First off, there is something I want to ask you about. There's a change, let's say, at Portland State University. You were one of the last two remaining faculty there until last year. So does this mean there's officially no dance department there?
Well, thank you for asking. I have been very honored to be teaching at Portland State since 2014, and there was a brief hiatus for 2 years, and I've been back since 2018. I think it would be too much to say that there has been a dance program there or dance department. What there has been is appropriately called a presence of dance. You may remember that the PSU dance department was historic here, both in its instruction and in the contemporary dance series. And one could argue that the PSU dance department up until 95, when it was completely eviscerated, really seeded so much of the contemporary dance community that we now experience in education, in performance, in curation. And even the Whitebird series and Pica series have a precedence in the PSU Contemporary Dance Series, because we were so lucky to see all that work for 15 years that the college brought, and it really whetted the appetite of the community for adventurous contemporary dance. And I think that both the Whitebird Series and Pica Series, when they bring dance, have really built off a tradition here. But anyway, the department was closed in 95, and then Judy Patton waded through 10 years of just teaching quietly there, and it began to have a resurgence in 2012 under the leadership of the amazing Terry Mathern, who was educated there, was a member of the company there, and she went on to lead the department and brought many of us back in to teach. And then in 2016, it was closed again. There was no fine arts dance in 2016. And I was asked to return in 2018 with the hopes that the dance minor could return. And as we're witnessing now, the college has had many challenges, fiscal, academic, all the things that all universities and colleges have been struggling with. And then we had the pandemic, and which was hard for every institution, cultural, art, or educational. And so PSU waded through that. It was not possible. I was told to bring the dance minor back at that time. And now, under the crisis that PSU currently faces, any coursework that is not part of a graduation requirement was eliminated from college. So dance is not the only thing that was hit here. Many, many, many other adjuncts, many other really beautiful courses that weren't embedded in a major or minor ceased to exist. So dance, I don't want anyone to feel like dance was targeted in some way, it just did not reside in a place where it's necessary to graduate, although students could get a fine arts credit for taking dance. So myself and another colleague, Noelle, who teaches kind of an African diasporic content, we've been stumbling along, hoping something would change. And unfortunately, based on the state of the university, which is very complex, and I can't claim to know everything about it, dance has again died at PSU. And I'm very sad that over the last 8 years since I've been there again, that there was never the leadership inside the Department of Fine Arts to make sure that dance existed. And I do think there's a certain irony at this point when PSU is proposing as a fine arts department to build this new building downtown. You can't, as Martha Ullman West would say, you can't just have fine and some of the performing arts. Like, dance is an essential performing art. And because of its history, it feels particularly sad and poignant. You know, I'm 63, so, you know, I was going to transition out soon. And I certainly hope that under the leadership of Dean Bynum and other people, that they can see the wisdom. I mean, Arlene Schnitzer and Harold built those, gave money for those gorgeous towers right on Broadway that are for dance, and the top one for theater as well. So there's layers of confusion, in my opinion. And if I was 35 or 40 and that was my primary place of focus, I might be churning the wheels a little harder. But I do think the PSU should take a deep internal look at not having the presence of a movement form that is so important as a performing art, but is essential for the history of the city of Portland. You cannot write the history of the city of Portland without PSU and the dance department there in terms of a cultural narrative.
Well, yeah, and that's really sad to hear you speak of this. I know that, is the theater department still there?
Yes, they're still there. In terms of deans and department heads, there's been a lot of department heads that come through music. And of course, if I was a department head, I would want to nurture and protect and build my own discipline as well. And theater is becoming more robust again. I think they had quite a few long-term tenure faculty kind of retire at the same time, which, as you know, if you've been in out of academic institutions, searches and all those things are long and complicated, and there's a lot of internal reckoning about directions we want to go. But I think the theater department is really on solid ground again. So I feel like dance is deserving of focus. I mean, I just want to say some names to you, just or for those of you who are listening. Chisao Hata, Vincent Martinez, Carolyn Stewart, Min Tron, Terry Mather, Sue Brantley, Tammy Gray, Judy Patton, Jan Dreyer, Pat Wong, Kathy Evlishan. I mean, I could go on. And anyone I forgot who's listening, I'm just trying to give you a sense of the template that those artists have created for our city. It's very deep and remarkable. And I was just, you know, in the last fumes of that and trying to do my part in continuing this really beautiful, incredible tradition.
Is the legacy.
It's the legacy. It's very deep and very profound to me. So, and what's interesting is that, you know, Dean Bynum came in 2014 and the current department head came in 2018. And my department head before that, Bonnie Miksch, the incredible experimental composer, came in 2004. So none of them really have an embodied, and that's part of our conversation today, is embodied history, right? They don't have an embodied feeling of what it was like to experience that department at its most robust and profound. And if anything dance is about, it's about an embodied experience. That's what we do in dance.
It's so sad because I think even as a theater artist, I remember my dance classes, and it was so integral to being able to move, to create character, to hold yourself, to feel good about yourself. You know, all of that was so important, you know, in the training, and they're all kind of, you know, integrated. I mean, they really are. I think that all the disciplines have kind of like your mycelium project, which we'll talk about, like threads to each other, right?
The silos are really, I think, a more administrative way to order things. I don't think artists think about such discreteness. I think they know they're interdisciplinary. But it's the way money flows. It's the way grants flow. It's the way tenure flows, right? So academia is complicated in that way. And my hope is that something will emerge at PSU to fill those gorgeous studios and to allow students. I mean, I'll say that I had in my most recent class in the fall, I had a former Jefferson dancer. I had a student who came out of the incredible dance program that Sonia Warfel, who's a former JD and a student of myself and Keith V. Goodman's, is now running that program. And one of her students was in my class, and a student from Cleveland. So I will just observe as the final exchange around this topic, which is that there are 5 conservatory level dance programs in the city of Portland. ACMA in Beaverton, incredible program that Julaine Stites from Jefferson seeded along with many other people. Of course, Jefferson program, the incredible program that Sonia Warfel is building at Franklin. I mean, really, she's doing remarkable work there. The Vancouver School of Arts and Academics, which I helped found and has a really robust dance program. And then, of course, Northwest Academy, which was founded, of course, by Mary Folberg and still has some dance within it. So PSU isn't even capturing as a business model these incredible graduates coming out. If they want to keep studying dance, they have to leave the city unless they can get into Reed or Lewis and Clark, and they have the resources to do so. But our public university is really not serving, and most of those were public school programs, right? Those are public school programs. They're not capturing public school dance graduates that are trained at a very, very high level. So none of it makes very much sense to me.
Yeah. I was wondering, what was your earliest experience with dance? Since we're talking about young people, you know, getting training.
My mother dragged me to ballet when I was a kid and tap because she studied ballet and tap. So I had that like many young people, especially girls in their history. But I remember in the 5th grade, I went to Bridal Mile High School in Portland and Portland Dance Theater, right? So we're talking Jen Dreyer, Greg Bielemeyer, Judy Patton, Pat Wong, that whole community of people. It was part of the CETA. Remember the CETA era grants?
Oh, yeah. During the 80s.
Yes, and late 70s. And they came to my grade school. And in the 5th grade, I can still remember, I didn't know who she was at the time, but I watched Jan Dreyer like become this like cloud and float around the stage. And I have a very embodied, there's that word again, memory of, wow, she's not telling me something with her words, but she's communicating some very particular quality with her body. And then I studied dance at the Firehouse Theater when I was young, and then at the Multnomah Club, and then Jacqueline Schumacher, Barbara Remington, like so many Portland greats that I wish I could interview, actually, because they're...
You really are a Portlander. Yeah.
I am a Portlander, I'm a good candidate for this mycelium project. Yeah. But those are my earliest. And then when I went away to college, I really studied very, very deeply. So.
Well, I was wondering, when you look back on your 4 decades of work, professional work, let's say, what projects are you the most proud of?
Because I'm really a conceptual thinker, I evolve the form of a project for the idea that I'm trying to work with. So I've never been anchored by form. So I've never felt like, for instance, as a dancer and as a choreographer, that I needed to make dances for spaces, right? I didn't have to be in a proscenium, or I didn't have to make things that actually looked like dances. Everything I've made is a choreography for sure, because it happens in space through time, but not all of them are dances. And so what I like about my oeuvre is I've given myself permission to not box myself in. So my immediate answer to your question is, I mean, my perhaps most audacious project is The Garden, which you mentioned, right?
I love that project. Yeah, talk a little bit about that, because I think just to get a visual image of it, it was this small intersection somewhere in downtown, like off of downtown, right? And there were dancers who were gardening, hoeing, planting plants. And that was just such an interesting idea. Did you actually end up doing a dance there, though? I don't remember that part of it.
No. I considered the plants and the volunteers, the performers, and the people who were driving by and walking were the audience. And, you know, we're going to touch on another thing that's kind of morphed or perhaps degraded a bit in our life here. So I received... In the first year, the Regional Arts and Culture Council, our dear Regional Arts and Culture Council, decided to have a temporary public art program, which was called In Situ. because of course most people think of public art as permanent sculpture or and or spaces that are designed. And RAC, being the innovator that it was, decided that they wanted to make a opportunity for artists like me and many other artists to do temporary projects, which means they didn't have to be edifices or things that stayed there. And I had been very moved by walking around New York and the gardens in Alphabet City, particularly around B and C streets. So I proposed to take that derelict plot of public land at the time, that triangle at the top of Broadway and the bottom of Broadway Drive, right above PSU, and turn that into a temporary edible urban garden to demonstrate, in some ways, the project was way ahead of its time, that we could grow food viably in the urban core. And the garden broke ground on April 10th of 2000, and it was struck. The curtain came down. The curtain went black on April 10th, 2001. And over that time, I grew 1,500 pounds of food that was all donated to shelters.
That's so amazing.
And I had 65 volunteers. Some of them were dancers. Some of them were just people who were really interested in the idea. And, you know, in that time, the unhoused, you know, every city has always had unhoused populations, certainly was nothing like it is now. But during that time, I have to say, no one ever degraded the garden. No one ever stole food from the garden. No one ever defecated in the garden. No one ever slept in the garden. But I got to know our unhoused population that kind of frequented that area. And they were protectors of that garden in the nighttime. And that garden really stood exactly as I left it every night at 6 o'clock. I'd return every day at 8, and it was exactly as it was. And it was a, I think, extraordinary moment in our city where adventurous ideas had spaces. And there was a certain kind of kindness and a certain kind of playfulness and openness. So, you know, I'm pleased with many of my projects, but I look at that one as a place where my city let me do something pretty unusual, like the Water Bureau donated all the water. I mean, it was a very interesting confluence.
It also opened your eyes to what performance could be, that exactly. It isn't presentational, it's living, it is a process, it is part of experiencing something. So I really loved how that opened your eyes to, or opened your heart a little bit to the idea that performance is what everybody does, just walking through life, you know?
Yes.
And we don't think of it that way, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about that probably. And actually, you did a Rain Stories on that project.
Yeah, I did.
For Living on Earth. So we had a long interview about that project.
Yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed that a lot. I think you are inspired by nature a lot.
That's
true. In your Mycelium Dreams project, you say it was inspired by reading a biologist's work. Just talk a little bit about that.
Her name is Suzanne Simard. And she is more of a known name now because I think she's been on the cover of Time magazine, and she's been written about by the New York Times many times and many other sources. If people are listening to On Being Project with Krista Tippett, there's a beautiful interview with her there. But Suzanne Simard is a forest biologist, and she's based at a university in British Columbia, but she was trained at Oregon State University. You see, the loops are always going on. And basically her research, her instincts told her that these trees that she was studying in the British Columbia area forests were in communication with each other. That's what her instincts, and I will say her instincts as a woman, I'm going to say, people say, confirmed. And so what her research did was confirm what her instincts and her sense of what she witnessed were. And she demonstrated to us that we have this incredible mycelium network under the soil, and that different kinds of tree species and similar tree species are interconnected through that mycelium network, and that they can communicate with each other. They can share resources. They can redistribute resources. If a tree is dying, it can give out its resources. And that the mycelium the mushrooms that we see are just the fruiting moment of this massive mycelium network. And she has a book that I read called Finding the Mother Tree. And as I was reading it, I was about to turn 60. I was confused. by being 16. And I was reading this book, and she talked about mother trees. And I realized in this community that I have been a mother tree in the field of dance. You know, I have opened 3 studios. I've taught probably 5,000 plus students. I've made all these projects. I've been in other people's projects. I've collaborated. I've mentored. I've worked as an arts administrator. And so I have been enabled by the work of people who've come before me, the mother trees before me. And I also have done the same, the sort of reciprocity, right? Which is what forests are about, which is what the natural world is about, a kind of reciprocity. And certainly mycelium is about that. And so in reading her book, I was trying to figure out how to think about and look at my practice for 40 years. And I felt I needed a visual. And when I was reading her book, it became clear to me that I could use this idea of mycelium and as a mother tree as a way to do that. So I just got a big giant piece of architectural drawing paper and put myself in the middle and drew my first professional connection, which was Jefferson High School, because I returned here from living in Berlin to teach at Jefferson in 1985. And so there I had an institution, and then I filled in all the people, and then Keith Goodman, who became dear departed, amazing Keith B. Goodman, he and I became fast friends. And so I drew a line, my line from him, and he took me to my first Mary Oslin dance class. And then, of course, everything just started to do this. Wow. Oh, you can't see my hands. Everything just started to connecting. That connected me to this and to that. And my entire career could just be, in certain ways, mapped like that. And I just spent like almost 3 months in the way you do a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you kind of a big one, a hard one, you put it on the table and you walk by, you put a couple of pieces in and you come back a day later and keep going. And so I just had it out, and I would have aha moments like, oh my gosh, I forgot my whole Touch Monkey Carolyn Stewart piece or my whole Susan Banyas Dreamswell piece. And I just started flushing it out, and it was so satisfying to just sit with it. And then I decided, wow, I bet the people on my map, my peers, would really value this experience. I found it very enriching.
Well, I saw it, and I'll put it on the web page, but it is pretty complex. But if you think about, you know, your own life, you know, having these life charts and the threads going out to which people that you come in contact with, it actually makes a lot of sense. But it really is very much like roots, you know, extending out to each other. You know, in a sense, I feel like I've been documenting the voices and thoughts of veteran artists for a while now, you know, for the last 25 years. And I think there's something so important about documenting people's lives, you know, people's work. And I'm really interested in the kind of questions you'll be asking and then the conversations you'll be having. But I also like the fact that it's a medium that's so personal when you have a conversation, especially when it's just audio only. I wonder if you can talk more about some of the folks that you've mentioned, some of them actually, mm-hmm. Along the way, like Chizao Hata, but tell us about how you chose and Susan Banyas. Tell us about some of the people that you will be featuring and what kind of conversations do you hope to have?
Even to get into this territory gets me very verklempt, because it brings up gratitude for me in a huge way. How much my ability to have a life as an artist here was enabled by a whole generation. You know, returning here in 1985, I walked into an ecosystem that was just humming along, and I got to enter that and was completely enabled by all this beautiful work. So this conversation series, archival conversation series I'm doing, is called Past Future. Thanks to my husband for actually coming up with that name for me. I was struggling. And it's one project of the Mycelium Dreams Project. The mapping is one project. There are about 70 maps at this point. And the conversation series is the next one. And I just woke up one morning and thought, everybody's stories matter. And boy, every story matters. And when you make your mycelium map, you realize, wow, you know, all these people. And so it felt important to me to start with those artists. I'm thinking of it like 67 and up, right? Who were very active, you know, creating the conditions of the weather in Portland as an artist, dance artist, when I came here. So I just began making lists. I asked other people who they thought people would send me names. And so 39 people ended up on that list, and it is not genre based. So it goes, you know, and of course I'm going to miss people, and people can tell me and I'll add them to my interview list. But it goes through ballet, through many different ethnic dance forms, people focused in jazz dance, and then of course in contemporary practice. And it includes not just the choreographer, who always gets a lot of attention, but it includes the lighting designers. It includes the writers and the critics, so that we're looking at, and people who have mostly been full educators here, right, for most of their career. People like Mary Folberg, right? People like Julaine Stites, people like Pat Wong. I mean, Pat Wong, you know, was around in the ether at PSU and was in Portland Dance Theater. But when she landed this job at Reed College, she gave herself over to Reed, and she fleshed out that dance program and the pedagogy. And the dance program we now encounter is really Pat's creative artwork as a dance artist. So I want to bring a light to all of the kinds of voices it takes to have a vital art community. My upcoming conversation is with the amazing Jeff Forbes, and anyone who's gone to any theater or dance here in the last 30 years has been in a lighting in the house that Jeff Forbes has lit, right? And of course, I need to interview Bill Bowes too, but people on my series this spring include, of course, the amazing Barry Johnson, who was at the
founder of ArtsWatch.
The founder of ArtsWatch, but before that, the editor of the Arts and the A&E at the Oregonian. He's written about visual art. He wrote a Carl Morris catalog, one of our great visual artists in the state of Oregon. He wrote about theater. He's written about dance. I mean, his contribution is so deep. And Chisao is one of my guests. Bobby Fother, who got a lot of beautiful attention around Intisar Abioto's huge Black Artists of Oregon exhibition at the museum. Bobby is a painter and a choreographer and dancer, and he's my guest in March. And then Vincent Martinez Greco goes back to PSU, who was trained there, and he opened a studio called Body Moves. Many people might be familiar. He's authored several sort of dance lineage and dance forms. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. And, you know, once a week, someone will say, oh, you forgot blah, blah, blah. And then I put them on a list, and slowly but surely, you know, it'll take me a while. And some people don't want to be interviewed publicly, right? So my interview with Jeff Forbes is at Performance Works. It's free. People can come and hang out and be with Jeff in real time. Some people want me just to come to their house and I'm interviewing them, which is great. I think that's awesome. And then some people don't live here anymore, like Ray Terrell. He doesn't live here. He lives in Minneapolis. I'm doing sort of all those different levels. And if people come to one of the in-person ones, like with Jeff and the rest of the artists I just mentioned, the last 20 or 30 minutes, I'm inviting each of those artists to do a tiny little download of their practice. So for instance, Joan Finley took us through how she starts abstract paintings because she's a dancer and a visual artist. And so when I interviewed her in September, she brought a blank canvas and all 20 of us there got to like go into her headspace of how she begins a painting. Susan Banyas did a fabulous improvisation, everyday dancing improvisation with us. And Robin Lane of Echo Theater and Do Jump did a fabulous, again, improvisation with everybody in the room. So each of them will do a little bit of embodied transfer for whoever is in the room.
Yeah. I mean, it's planned to be an 18-month project, but it sounds like you might be doing it a little bit longer as people suggest more people for you to talk with. So that's not bad. You know, it's an ongoing thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fine. It's ongoing. And, you know, at some point I would like it if other people are interviewing and it's just very easy to do. And then it becomes more like, wow, I want to learn about that artist and how they've led a life and what their concerns are.
Well, you know, and you're doing the whole ecosystem, which is great because I think everything supports, all art supports other artists in some way or fashion. We have to collaborate in some way. And I love that you're archiving, you know, these voices, these thoughts. And that's something we don't do enough of just to have them remembered. Because when you were talking about Keith Goodman and Mary Oslin, I mean, they went too young too way young. Too- and my good friend Carolyn Holtzman went way too young, you know. So I love that you're documenting people while we can. So I hate to laugh about it, but, you know, what are you going to do? You know, this is one way to remember people while we are alive. So I'm all for that.
Well, a lot of people don't know, and I want to shine a light on this too, as I'm doing this project, and I'm certainly not the first. I want to do a shout out to my colleague, Eric Nordstrom, who created a film called Moving History. But Judy Patton, in all her prescience, worked with the PSU Library to create a special collection that was seeded by Martha Ullman West's papers, right? Our esteemed writer here. And so her papers will live there, and they seeded this dance special collection. And over the years, a few things were added to it. But when Eric decided to make his film, probably 6 or 7 years ago now, he uploaded all of the long interviews, which were, you know, obviously it was a film. And there were about 9 or 10 of us in that. And then he also uploaded all of the long form of documentation that he edited, you know, different clips of each other's work. And that really boosted the archive tremendously. Talk about both Keith and Mary. We have a place now. So it's very easy to contribute. And any choreographer here who feels they have a seminal work they'd like to have accessible to the public, it's a non-curated space. You can upload your work there as a dance artist in this city. This is at the PSU Dance Archive, you could call it.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That's so wonderful.
Very exciting stuff.
You've always seemed like a very passionate person to me, very passionate about the arts, about dance. How do you keep that passion alive for you? And what inspires you?
So I like ideas. And I like to be around other people who like ideas. And artists who like ideas are about the most fun people to be around. So, you know, I don't really care what discipline they create inside of. I'm just interested in being with people who are thinking about the world and thinking about the way they see it and giving form to that so we can all learn something or feel something or be introduced to something. And that's a pretty great way to be alive, you know, when you're around people who are really looking and paying attention deeply and then are trying to reframe that from their own special sauce so that you can enter into how they might see. I mean, it's a great way to understand people in real time. So I feel lucky about that, and it keeps me very excited. I think, too, I'll say that until I lost my class at PSU, I have been around young people, whether that's kindergarten through graduate students. When I was at Mills, I was teaching the MFA students. And when you're around students who've decided to study the arts, you know this, it's like you can still change someone's world by the kind of interaction you have with them and the kind of things you introduce them to. And to watch people, students, get continually excited about what an art form can do and how their body can be part of that, that's pretty inspiring stuff to be around.
I agree. And that helps you for yourself to have another perspective so you don't get into this jaded, oh, I've done everything. And oh, I think that we can always, as artists, sometimes get into a funk. But when you're working with young people, you start to remember why you loved it so much.
I totally agree. And also, because my experience of higher education in the last 25 years has spent quite a bit of time on cultural critique, and students have developed a lot more language and practice with looking at something. And sometimes I sit there and they're digesting something that we've watched, and I'm kind of blown away by how much access they have to complexity and still stay with their feelings. That's pretty awesome. And my PSU, I mean, all my students have always blown me away, but these groups of students that I've been working with at PSU for the last 8 years have just moved me very deeply in that way. I've learned from them so very much. So grateful for that opportunity.
Well, I always learn from you whenever I get a chance to talk with you or work with you. It was really wonderful to catch up, Linda. Really wonderful. And kudos to you for doing the work that you're doing. I think it's really important to archive these voices, you know. So
thank you, Dibe. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
It's a hard project. It's not an easy one. No.
No, it's not an easy project.
But usually that means it's worth it.
Yes, I totally agree, right? One way to talk about, look back at our work. When we knew it was working, yeah. It was kicking our butt.
It's kind of hard. Yeah, that was hard. I don't know why it's so hard. I don't want to do this anymore, but well. Well, thank you for this conversation, Linda K. Johnson. Always inspiring and always forward thinking. You can find out more info about Mycelium Dreams at lindakjohnson.net. And I'll have that link and more info as well as this podcast on stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with, Linda?
Well, I just want to reflect my appreciation for you because you have been in that seat doing this work for so long.
It's been a long time.
A long time, and it's really beautiful work, Jemay. Seriously, thank you for what you've been doing here.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Always a pleasure. That's it for Stage and Studio on Arts Watch. Till the next conversation, I'm Jemay Roberts.